What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Maggie Anton, author of the new book, 50 Shades of Talmud, and the Rashi's Daughters series. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our two Jewish maven on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. Today in Israel, they're celebrating Yom Yerushalayim on the Jewish calendar, the holiday that commemorates the reunification of the city of Jerusalem in the miraculous Six-Day War of 1967. It's now been 49 years since we Jews were able to return to the Kotel, the Western Wall, holiest place in the world for Jews, since the commander of the troops who captured the old city from Jordanian forces, Mota Gur, announced,
"The wireless transmission carried by soldiers who broke through Jerusalem's old city,
Har Habayit Biyadenu, the Temple Mount is in our hands." Israeli paratroopers captured the Western Wall and the Temple Mount, restoring the Jewish presence to the old city of Jerusalem that Arabs had forcibly denied since the founding of the state and the loss of the old city in the Independence War. That same day in 1967, Defense Minister Moshe Dayan declared famously, "This morning, that is today, Yom Yerushalayim, the Israel Defense Forces liberated Jerusalem. We have united Jerusalem, the divided capital of Israel. We have returned to the holiest of our holy places, never to part from it again. To our Arab neighbors, we extend also at this hour, and with added emphasis, at this hour, our hand in peace. And to our Christian and Muslim fellow citizens, we solemnly promise full religious freedom and rights. We did not come to Jerusalem for the sake of other people's holy places, not to interfere with the adherents of other faiths, but in order to safeguard its entirety and to live there together with others in unity." Well, next year we'll mark the 50th anniversary of the reunification of Jerusalem, Yerushalayim, which in Hebrew means Ir Shalom, City of Peace. It has not often been that, but it has been the most sacred place in the whole world for Jews for 3,000 years. And wherever we were scattered in the world, we always longed to return to Jerusalem. Well, we have. And on the ruins of that destroyed Jewish quarter, the one they found in 1967, the Israelis have built a magnificent new Jewish quarter of Jerusalem out of stone and passion and love. Yom Yerushalayim is celebrated in Israel with military parades and ceremonies, and especially, of course, in Jerusalem itself. It is far less observed by Jewish communities outside of Israel, but Yom Yerushalayim is historically a remarkable and important day. Next year, Jerusalem Day will be a major celebration, you know, for the 50th anniversary. But this Jerusalem Day is also a time to wonder about where we have come these 49 years later. Just last week, Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu appointed Avigdor Lieberman as Israel's new defense minister. Defense minister is the most important position in the Israeli government after prime minister. And the contrast between Moshe Dayan in 1967 and Avigdor Lieberman in 2016 is pretty stunning. Dayan was himself a war hero, and after coordinating one of the greatest military upsets of all time, a shocking and total victory over much larger and better equipped enemies, Dayan reached out his hand towards the defeated Arabs, offering peace. Avigdor Lieberman has no military experience, has led no successful campaigns in any area except the political, and has many times expressed hatred and disdain for Arabs. It is a disturbing situation, and one that bears very little promise of peace with the Palestinians in the near or foreseeable future. Of course, Dayan's olive branch offering to the Arabs in 1967 was categorically rejected. It's not clear that any course of action Israel could have taken then would have resulted in a lasting peace. But it certainly appears that in putting Lieberman in as Minister of Defense, Netanyahu is not interested in advancing the cause of peaceful coexistence. On the other hand, Avigdor Lieberman has served as foreign minister on two separate occasions, and in spite of profound fears that he would blow up Israel's relationships with the entire world, he did reasonably well. So perhaps it's not as terrible an appointment as it appears to be on the surface. Anyway, let's celebrate Yom Yerushalayim with the best song of all about Jerusalem, Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, Jerusalem of Gold.
Avir harim zalur kayayin, bereach oranim, nisa beruach harabayim, nimkol ba'amonim. Uvetardemat ilan ba'even, shvuya ba'chaloma, ha'ir asher badad yoshevet, uveliba. Shel nechoshen veshel or, alo lechol sheirayich ani kinor. Yerushalayim shel zahav veshel nechoshen veshel or, alo lechol sheirayich ani kinor. Eichayav shuborot hamad. Shuk reka ve'ein pokedet har habayit ma'ir ha'atika uva me'arot asher basela ve'alelot ruho ve'ein yored yam ha'melach mederech yericho Yerushalayim shel zahav ושל נחושת ושל אור הלא לכל שירייך אני כינור ירושלים של זהב ושל נחושת ושל אור הלא לכל שירייך אני כינור.
That was Shuli Natan singing Naomi Shemer's classic Jerusalem of Gold for Yom Yerushalayim today. This coming Saturday night and Sunday, we complete the counting of the Omer and celebrate the pilgrimage festival of Shavuot, the Feast of Weeks. This holiday of Shavuot is a bit of an orphan festival in today's Jewish world. Falling as it does in the late spring, early summer, Shavuot or Shavuos, the Feast of Weeks and of receiving the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai, and the time of the harvest of the first fruits, is far less observed than Passover or Hanukkah, Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur, perhaps even less celebrated among American Jews than Sukkot, the also neglected harvest holiday in the fall. In addition, Shavuot is just a one-day event, or 2 days if you're conservative or orthodox, and that means that if you don't pay attention to the calendar, you can miss it much more easily than the longer festivals. But that would be a shame, for this holiday celebrates not only the powerful moment when God revealed both presence and purpose to our people and the world, but also our continuing relationship with a higher power. Exploring that relationship is at the heart of the religious experience of the world. All Judaism and all Western ethics begin with the Ten Commandments, although it certainly doesn't end there. And this coming Saturday night, I urge you to come to Temple, celebrate the great moment of revelation at Mount Sinai with a late-night study session, a Tikkun Leil Shavuot. It's a wonderful chance to expand your knowledge and explore the commitment of being part of a people who are in covenant with God. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish, Maggie Anton, is the author of the popular Rashi's Daughters series of books and the award-winning Rav Chista's Daughter as well. But she has a new book out about, well, sex, in what is arguably the most important Jewish text of all the Babylonian Talmud. Her funny and provocative new book, 50 Shades of Talmud, explores human sexuality through the eyes of the rabbis and her own eyes. Find out why she decided to explore this colorful area when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones, so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Maggie Anton. She's the author of the series on Rashi's daughters and book on Rav Chista's progeny that was nominated for a National Jewish Book Award. Her new book is called 50 Shades of Talmud, What the First Rabbis Had to Say About You Know What. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning to you, Rabbi Cohen. I'm delighted to be here.
So, you've written extensively about some of the great commentators' daughters, granddaughters, and their escapades, and it's all been really quite wonderful, and now you decide to write about sex.
Well, it was actually an accident how that happened. I have another historical novel, you know, Women in Talmud, at, you know, in a different time, but I had been on a big book tour last year, promoting the last of the Rav Chista's daughter series. And I was talking to at a Hadassah group in New Jersey, a lunch, and as often happens with a Hadassah daytime event, there were no men there. So I was starting to tell them about some of the interesting things I'd learned about sex in the Talmud. And the women were laughing and enjoying it. And one of the women stood up and said, "Oh, you should write 50 Shades of Talmud." And in the car on the way back to where I was staying, I thought, I could do that. I could do that. That would be easy. And I thought, oh, I'll find 50 sections of Talmud that have to do with sexual matters. I'll translate it into, like, modern English, add a little of my own views. And I imagined something really short and not very expensive. And that's how it ended up. And my first concern was that I wouldn't be able to find 50 sections. But as it turned out, I found 87 discussions of sex in the Talmud, and I had to cut it back to the best 50. So then when I finished the text, I gave it to my daughter, who is my best and worst critic. She's not ashamed to tell me, you know, straight out, this is lousy, Mom. This is boring. You got to fix this. My professional editors care about my feelings, like my daughter doesn't. She's not worried about our relationship. So my daughter said, you should punch it up with some quotes or jokes. And she gave me some examples that she found. And I thought, yeah, that really helps. And so then I went and looked for 50 appropriate, well, we could say inappropriate, but, you know, quotes and jokes that would match the Talmud subject. And I found 50 of them, and my editors liked it so much. They said, find more. We want one on every page. So my research, the Talmud parts I already had, I keep copious notes on everything that I study and have used in my books, because readers often email me, where did this section come from? Did you make that up, or is that really in the Talmud? And then I can tell them, if I made it up, that I made it up, or if it's from the Talmud, what's the daf, what's the page number and tractate that it comes from. So now, instead of researching Talmud, I was researching for good quotes and pithy sayings, and I was, of course, many comedians are Jewish. I tried to use Jewish quotes when I could, but I found lots of them. That was a lot of fun. And then someone said, oh, you should have, like, New Yorker-style cartoons. And I thought, okay. And my editor had a had an illustrator that she, you know, that they worked with. And so I, you know, spent a lot of time emailing to him what the ideas for the cartoons in there were all my ideas, and then he illustrated them. I didn't draw this stuff. I'm no artist. But I came up with the ideas, and we made, you know, commissioned, like, I think 17 illustrations that are scattered throughout to, you know, to kind
to,
of...
To
like,
illustrate without being too graphic, the exact...
Yeah, no, they're definitely not... You know, this is not porn.
Right.
Most people find it cute and entertaining. And indeed, my goal on all of this, as it's been through all of my novels, is to get more women, more Jews who have never been exposed to Talmud to want to study Talmud.
And I'll tell you, this definitely exposes people to Talmud in a different way. We will talk much more with Maggie Anton. Her book is called 50 Shades of Talmud when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish. We welcome our friends from Freedom Smoke, David and Pamela. You guys focus so much on your customers. Tell us why they're so important to you.
Our customers are extremely important to us. It's why we built this company. Our job is to get people to quit smoking, and we're extremely good at it. You can come in a very nice, comfortable lounge environment, try anything you want to try. You'll have knowledgeable and helpful staff that will be happy to get you or your family and loved ones to quit smoking.
We have 4 locations in Tucson, 1 in Catalina on the Pinal border, and our latest store has just opened in Sierra Vista.
And these are all lounges, sort of a comfortable environment for people to come in.
Yes, they're set up with couches and pool tables, pinball machines, video games, anything to help you along with your time.
What's the best way for people to find out more information?
They can go onto our website at freedomsmokeusa.com or call our toll-free hotline for any information that you want, 1-800-705-7013.
And that number again is?
1-800-705-7013.
Thanks so much. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of 4 activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award in 2016, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kfel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com, T-O-O Jewish Radio. You can hear all past and present shows by streaming them from the website or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We have 5 months until we elect a new president of these United States. We now continue our 2016 Too Jewish Presidential Report. The ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, has announced a task force to look into the anti-Semitic harassment online, including death threats of journalists who are covering the 2016 presidential campaign. The members of the task force include at least 2 journalists who were targeted by self-described followers of Donald Trump after writing about the presumptive GOP candidate's campaign for president. The Task Force on Hate Speech and Journalism announced this week was established after the ADL said it had been contacted by journalists from across the political spectrum who have faced harassment and anti-Semitic messages in response to their coverage. Journalists are used to being criticized, but this election cycle, we repeatedly have seen criticism quickly cross the line into ugly anti-Semitic and other hateful attacks, including death threats, said Jonathan Greenblatt, the ADL's chief executive. Among those who have reported receiving anti-Semitic abuse on social media are CNN's Jake Tapper, Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic, and Jonathan Weissman of The New York Times. Among those who'll serve on the task force are Julia Jaffe, a prominent freelancer who wrote a GQ profile of Melania Trump, the candidate's wife, and Bethany Mendel, a contributor to the New York Post and the Jewish Daily Forward, who were both targeted by violent social media messages. The task force aims to assess the scope and source of harassment of journalists, determining if and how the trend impacts the electorate, or if it has a chilling effect on free speech, and wants to propose solutions and/or countermeasures. By the way, Mendel wrote about her experience of being targeted by saying, "My Trump tweets earned me so many anti-Semitic haters that I bought a gun." The work of this task force dovetails with that of the ADL's Center on Extremism, which has been monitoring and addressing online harassment for decades. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, we've been doing a series on the diaspora and Jewish life in the diaspora now. Is it sustainable, which is the question that people ask? I think it's sort of the wrong question. The question is, which Jewish communities are going to continue to flourish? Which ones are just going to continue to exist? Which ones might disappear? And there are certain elements, you know, we've talked about how some ancient great Jewish communities have literally disappeared in the last 20 or 30 years. The Jewish community of Iraq, which goes back 2,600 years. The Jewish community of Yemen, which goes back well over 2,000 years. These are basically gone.
Syria.
Now. Syria, right.
Egypt is virtually gone. I mean, there will be a generation from now, there will be no Jews left in Egypt.
Right. And there have been Jews there not only since the first diaspora, but if you think about it, you know, back to Abraham's time. You don't have to go back to Moses and slavery.
Right.
So it's not how long they've been around, but it's that they have a viable institutional framework and that they're attractive for Jews to stay.
All right. So then I guess the question really boils down to, in the diaspora, what ensures the survival of a community? What are the sine qua nons, like what without which a Jewish community disappears?
And, you know, from my perspective, if you don't have successful synagogues, the rest of it really doesn't matter, because people don't stay secular Jews for generations. They just don't. They may say that, they may feel that they're culturally Jewish, but within a generation or two, they're not Jewish anymore. And we've seen this historically in highly civilized, highly developed communities around the world. So there has to be a religious component.
But then, you know, an element of the question you just asked is it only Orthodox Jewish communities that truly survive as Jewish communities? Or can communities which innovate and experiment with new forms of Judaism, whether Reform, Conservative, Reconstructionist, whatever, can they ensure the survival of a Jewish community outside of Orthodoxy?
Yeah, you know, and I would add, I would say that the truth is that Orthodoxy survived by being innovative, and that the fact that it is surviving and in some areas thriving today is because it has become innovative and uses the web to reach out and does all kinds of social media stuff and things that it's not like that was decreed in the Mishnah. So I think Orthodoxy has always been somewhat innovative. You think of Hasidism, that had very little relationship in many ways to the Judaism that preceded it, and it's ultra-Orthodox.
Right.
So I think Orthodoxy has been innovative, and I also think, I'm a little biased, but the Reform Movement's been around since about 1800, so it's not exactly a Johnny-come-lately, although to Orthodox Jews, you know, that's yesterday. So I think that there are definitely ways that these innovations have to take place, and it's not going to just be a religious framework, but I think without that, what you're going to have is an adherence to certain ideas, but not an enduring structure.
Right. And I think that, you know, there are certain elements to which different groups might give different weight, but I think language is one of the elements, you know, some familiarity with Hebrew and or Aramaic.
Absolutely.
And whatever. And text. I mean, we are the people of the book, after all. So we can't discard the books. Now, the foundational texts, whether we're talking about Tanakh or whether we're talking about Talmud or Siddur, whatever, I think
whether those books are on the shelf or in your iPhone, that commitment, I think, is also central, so that there has to be that same kind of Torah and prayer.
those elements haven't changed, if you think about it. And if you have those elements...
Al-Shlosha Devarim.
If you have those elements, then I think that these diaspora communities can remain vital, and you have to have a commitment to them. I think the only other piece I would add is there has to be a commitment to educating children in Judaism and making Judaism vital, and to bringing people in.
Right. From your lips to God's ears.
Thank you. We'll talk next week. Thanks,
Tom. I look forward to it.
We welcome Ramivi Nahon, Israel Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
We're getting into this summer. For Americans, that means summer vacations. For Israelis, it means summer vacations, too. Israelis used to go all over the region. I remember when I would go scuba diving in Sinai, and I always traveled with Israelis. That was a favorite destination. Well, not so much for a while. Then in Turkey, it seemed like everybody was Israeli, and it's a great place to go. It's close to Israel, huge, beautiful country. Now it doesn't seem so safe either anymore for Israelis, and maybe for Westerners more broadly. Where do Israelis go on vacation?
So, yeah, you said right. And Turkey, by the way, 10 or 20 years 20 years ago? Yeah. I used to go with, you know, with Ellie, and then we went with the kids.
I didn't see you there, but I was there about that time.
And you know what? You will think that Israeli tourists are like a huge portion of the Turkish because they knew how to talk to you in Hebrew, and they will bargain with you in Hebrew.
Yeah, but you'd see signs in Hebrew sometimes,
yeah,
in Turkey.
And yep. Yeah, it was very funny. But at the end of the day, you know, we are very tiny, so we are less than, I would say, maybe 3% of the tourism in Turkey. But anyway, as you said, like Sinai was a very, very popular site, and Turkey, and then after Turkey wasn't so safe since the Marmara and before, Israeli liked Cyprus and Greece, which was cheaper but not so nice like Turkey, because Turkey hotels are very fancy and all inclusive and very, very good.
And lots of great sites, you know, tremendous things to see in Turkey.
Yeah,
good beaches, everything.
But now more like East Europe. Europe always was, you know, a destination.
But an expensive destination.
East Europe, it's just beautiful. You know, you can find green, you can find, like, you know, desert. You can find everything in East Europe. Georgia, it's a very...
So Georgia?
Yes. And Budapest, Bulgaria, Prague.
Right.
My brother lives in Prague.
Oh, there you go.
But yeah, Prague is a very... because it's still cheap. And there is a lot of, you know, history to see, and there are a lot of beautiful places.
Good food.
Casino, beaches, some of them have like some beaches and nice.
It's interesting. You know, I do remember how, you know, Israel is a small country, as you said, and it also feels a little claustrophobic sometimes, I think, for Israelis who, you know, you can go everywhere in Israel, but actually there's no cheap place to go in Israel. If you go to Eilat, it's more expensive by far than going to Bulgaria.
Bidiyuk. And if you go to Eilat, you will see all your family, all your friends, those who you wanted to see, those you didn't want to see, you'll see them. You know, it's like...
Right. So you can go to the Galilee, you can go to Eilat, but it's all the same people. You might as well go somewhere else.
And it's cheaper to go abroad, which is funny.
It is funny. Yeah. Well, I hope Israelis have good summer vacations too. Thanks, Oshrat.
Toda rabbi.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Jarrow Psych specializes in providing short-term, inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Jarrow Psychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Boker Tov.
Boker Or. There is a particular program that's been established by the Israeli government, connection with Jewish communities all over the world, particularly in the United States, called Partnership, in which you create a relationship between two regions. that's been very active in our region with kids. Can right. you explore that a little bit with us?
Sure. And actually, it's nice to note that the model we see in Tucson has been recognized by the Israeli government as exceptional and something to kind of emulate around the globe. So in Tucson, we partner with a region called Chof Ashkelon, which has many commonalities. For example, it's a desert region. It's not the wealthiest of communities. And so there are a lot of parallels that are in place organically between our areas. And we're fortunate here to have amazing leadership that is kind of sent by Israel out into what they consider the diaspora, and many, many of us consider the diaspora too, to educate, to connect, to have these relationships and really build the bond. We have a very talented gal in our community, Oshrat Barel, who lives here.
We just heard on the show.
Right, yeah.
Mivina in Israel. I think we're all familiar with Oshrat. Mm-hmm.
And she... provides great leadership to work with the synagogues and the organizations and other areas of the community to do programming. And that programming takes all kinds of shapes and forms. Some of it involves people. There are people from the region who kind of travel back and forth and work with our families, our kids, our leadership, our professionals in the community. So there are great connections and synergy there. And there are very exciting programs that take place. At my synagogue, Anti-Israel, we celebrate a partnership with another area in Israel. And as kids have a bar or bat mitzvah, they make a contribution to that area.
Isn't that nice? And yeah. At Temple Emmanuel, my synagogue, we've had a twinning program with a classroom, and we trade.
Beautiful.
We Skype back and forth with
nice.
The kids.
We do similar things like that with this specific region at THA too.
Right. Exactly.
And you've heard me talk on the air about pen paling and Skyping and lighting the menorah together.
Right.
And then our eighth graders go, and they literally go to the region and they meet the kids that they've been getting to know over the years.
What are the benefits?
There are so many great benefits. First of all, it kind of expands our consciousness and our awareness so that we can sort of see past the blinders of life in America. We're one of the only countries in the world where most of the people speak only one language, for example. So it broadens our horizons. It builds support for Israel. And it's, you know, the more we can support each other as Jews within our country and within between Israel and America, the stronger we are as Am Yisrael, as the nation of Israel. So it fosters relationships. It breaks down the walls of ignorance and lack of knowledge.
And what could be a better program than something that expands knowledge and understanding of people around the globe, in this case between Israel and America?
We've got to support Israel. We're there for Israel, and Israel's there for us, and it is part of being a Jew.
Thanks, John. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high schools, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students. A rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service.
The new rabbi is in the middle of a sermon when he suddenly beckons the shamus, the head usher, to come over. The rabbi says, "That man in the third row is asleep. Wake him up." And the shamus replies, "You put him to sleep. You wake him up." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we chant the second portion of the book of Numbers, Naso, which includes a remarkable blessing. The Birkat Kohanim, the priestly blessing, is really three distinct brachot, three separate prayers, with which the ancient priests are commanded to bless the people. From its inception, this three-part blessing has had exceptional importance. The Torah quotes God saying, "With this blessing you will place my name on the people of Israel, Samu et Shemi al Bnei Yisrael." That is, this very blessing conveys God's presence among us and offers God's protection. The blessing was given by the Kohanim, the highest class of priests, those entrusted with the service of the tabernacle and temple. We still use this blessing at every joyous life cycle event, and it remains beautiful and powerful. The text is, "May God bless you and guard you. May the light of God's presence shine on you and be gracious to you. May God's presence turn to you and grant you peace." In essence, the Birkat Kohanim asks God to supply our most important needs. The majority of the interpretations of this portion see the first blessing requesting physical safety and health, the second asking for material needs to be satisfied, and the third blessing seeking spiritual comfort and confidence. Without any of these blessings, our lives become a challenge. With all three, we are assured true quality of life. After thousands of years, these three elements, safety, grace, and peace, remain central to our lives and a gift from God. May you be blessed with each of these, with all of these, this week and always. When we come back on To Jewish, our guest, Maggie Anton, will explain the Jewish view on sex and why the Talmud spends so much time exploring it. Find out about the new book, 50 Shades of Talmud, when we return in a moment here on To Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Are you or a loved one facing a terminal illness? Casa de la Luz Hospice offers patients and loved ones the support necessary to face the final months of life. Paid for by Medicare and most private insurances, hospice team members provide medical, emotional, and spiritual care in the security and comfort of the patient's home. Casa de la Luz has been a leading provider of hospice care in Tucson since 1998, and today serves more patients in Pima County than any other local hospice provider. The mission of Casa de la Luz Hospice is to provide superior care to patients and their loved ones, so that they may complete their mission on this earth in comfort, dignity, and harmony. Call 544-9890 to learn more about how Casa de la Luz Hospice can help you. That's 544-9890. Casa de la Luz Hospice, because every day counts.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In Israel, the trial of the Israeli soldier accused of shooting to death a Palestinian stabber in Hebron began last week. IDF Sergeant Elor Azaria shot and killed Palestinian assailant Abdel Fattah al-Sharif in Hebron on March 24th, after he had already been neutralized after trying to attack soldiers. Al-Sharif was one of two Palestinian terrorists who attacked a team of IDF soldiers. stabbing one of them before they themselves were shot. One terrorist was killed. The other, al-Sharif, was wounded. He was lying on the road when, according to all reports, Sergeant Azaria arrived, observed the scene, and without being commanded to do so, shot the terrorist in the head. An autopsy performed by Israeli forensic doctors in the presence of a Palestinian forensic doctor revealed that that was the shot that killed the terrorist. This terrible incident highlights something about Israel's army, however, that is quite the opposite of what some say. Azaria was immediately arrested, is being tried just 2 months after shooting al-Sharif. He will very likely be convicted, stripped of his rank, and sent to prison for many years. He violated the code of ethics the IDF takes very seriously. The incident was not hushed up, but publicized freely in Israel's open society, and will be firmly condemned with consequences for the perpetrator and, hopefully, better training for all soldiers. That is how a true democracy faces its challenges, mistakes, and sins. As Professor Asa Kasher, the Israel Prize winner in philosophy who wrote the code of ethics used by the IDF, says, the IDF and many other parts of Israeli society are morally strong and resilient. They will overcome terrorist activities on the one hand and failures to maintain high ethical standards on the other. In a story that Two Jewish has been following from Great Britain, the head of Britain's Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, called for sanctions against Israel and described some of the Jewish state's politicians as criminals who should be banned from Britain, all in a letter he sent to the English foreign minister. Corbyn's anti-Israel letters, written when he was a parliament member but before he was elected party chief, were obtained by the UK's Jewish News. Through a Freedom of Information request, the Jewish News reported that Corbyn also said Israel treats Palestinians with disdain and that its victimization of the people of East Jerusalem is an abomination. Corbyn is already under fire from British Jewish leaders who have voiced concerns that he is not doing enough to address anti-Semitism among Labour Party members. News of the letters came on the same day a documentary on Corbyn showed him criticizing a Jewish journalist who wrote that the Labour Party has an anti-Semitism problem. Corbyn describes a Manchester Guardian op-ed by Jonathan Friedland about Labour's anti-Semitism problem as utterly disgusting, subliminal nastiness, the whole lot of it. Corbyn adds that Friedland, who is also a columnist for London's Jewish Chronicle, is not a good guy at all. He seems kind of obsessed with me. According to the Jewish News, Corbyn in 2013 called on then Foreign Secretary William Hague to stop allowing Israel's criminal politicians to come to our country freely, end the siege of Gaza, ensure the BBC portray Palestine fairly, complaining that the national broadcaster barely mentioned the Palestinian hunger strike. Actually, many Jews and most Israelis have accused the BBC of having a pro-Palestinian bias. On the subject of banning Israeli politicians, Corbyn wrote, I cannot help wondering how long successive governments are going to stand by, pretending that an occupying power of so many years should be treated in the same way as the people whose land is not only occupied but routinely confiscated. That's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Maggie Anton, best known as the novelist of Rashi's Daughters and Rav Chista's Daughters series, all about women in the period of rabbinic interpretation and Talmud. And her new book is A Departure, 50 Shades of Talmud, What the First Rabbis Had to Say About, well, sex. Only it's called You Know What. Maggie, you mentioned that you keep copious notes when you study Talmud. Writing was not your first career. You worked for Kaiser Permanente as a chemist for a long time. Tell us how you began to write and how you began to explore Talmud.
Well, I began to explore Talmud first. I was not one of those people who has the great American novel in their mind or, you know, for years and years first. I never expected to be a writer. I didn't take writing classes. I wasn't in writing groups. I didn't even take English in college. Yes, I was a chemistry major. But what happened is in the early 1990s, I heard about a woman's Talmud class in Los Angeles, where I live, being taught by Rachel Adler, who is now a rabbi, a professor at Hebrew Union College here in L.A. But back then, she didn't have her Ph.D., and she started this woman's class because even though Southern California is the largest, the second largest Jewish population in the world, there was no place a woman could go to study Talmud. They had Drisha in New York. There were some women's yeshivot in Israel. But for pretty much the 1,500 years there's been Talmud, women have been excluded, discouraged, prevented, forbidden. And I admit, I signed up for the class because I wanted to see what was this forbidden stuff that women weren't supposed to study. You know, all you have to do is forbid something and it immediately becomes much more attractive. I had no idea what I was getting into. My Talmud experience at that time consisted of having read The Chosen by Chaim Potok.
Right. Not a bad place to start, but not exactly the same thing as studying Talmud.
No. I mean, I had study, you know, I had Torah study at my synagogue, the usual basic kind of weekly parsha thing. And I had some prayer book Hebrew, but I was so out of my depths in this class, it was amazing. All the other women in it went on to be rabbis and scholars, and I persevered, and mostly because I fell in love with Talmud. It became my passion. I was so impressed at the diversity of opinions that the rabbis have in the Talmud. And very often, it seemed, that the two rabbis who are arguing, neither one of them wins. They go teku, which means the argument, the debate remains, and people can follow either of the two decisions. And the idea, I didn't realize that Jewish law was not so strict and monolithic as I had been led to believe, at least not in Talmudic times, it wasn't. And there was certainly respect for the loser position. I mean, Hillel and Shammai, even though, you know, the voice of heaven came down and said that the halakha was with Hillel, which actually it wasn't. There were plenty of times when Shammai wins the argument. The school of Shammai didn't close shop. His students kept studying with him. People followed his decisions if they felt that they were the right ones. People from the school of Shammai married people from the school of Hillel. And I saw this as modern Jews have become very there is not the acceptance of diversity. Yes, we're very diverse, all kinds of different movements, but not the cooperation and connection that there was with the disagreeing groups in the Talmud, and they certainly disagreed vehemently. There's some strong language, but they were definitely one people with, you know, one group of laws that they were struggling. The rabbis of the Talmud are struggling on how are we going to do Judaism now that Rome has destroyed the temple and there's no priests and there's no sacrifice and we can't do most of what the Torah tells us to do because we don't have the sacrificial system anymore. And out of the Talmud come synagogues and rabbis and holidays like Hanukkah and, well, Tisha B'Av is not exactly a holiday, but, you know, our whole liturgy comes out of the Talmud. And to discover this is the Judaism that I do in my life today, I recognized where it came, its roots in the Talmud, whereas studying Torah, it was more like studying ancient history, but really, I don't do sacrifices anymore, and I never have. And it was more like history than what it than having anything to do with the actual rituals and observances that I was doing in my life.
So one of the other interesting little tidbits, and there's many, it's a fun book, was that if the woman, as you put in Talmudic euphemism, if the woman climaxed first, then it was likely to be a boy baby.
Yes, I mean, believe me, the Talmud's medical advice is
creative. Let's say creative.
It's what you would expect from a culture that believes illness and, you know, is either caused by the evil eye or demons. So, you know, we don't read the Talmud.
Which, by the way, was most cultures till about the 19th century. But
oh yeah, there's plenty still. You wouldn't believe the number of amulets evil eye amulets you can get on the internet or Judaica stores.
Right, right.
It's still there, but no, it worked out very well for women. That the rabbis believed in order to have sons, and they based this on the Torah, that they something, you know, Leah and Jacob, they ascribed the sons to Leah and the daughter Dinah to Jacob, and the rabbis in their somewhat convoluted Talmudic reasoning conclude this to mean that if the woman emits seed, if she climaxes first, you'll have boys, and if the man climaxes first, you'll have girls. And they knew very well everybody wanted boys, because they then go into the Talmud in some explicit detail, which is not surprising for anybody who studies Talmud, because the rabbis talk about everything in great detail. This is Jewish law. They need to tell you exactly what is what and how to do it, and they do tell you correctly, actually, how to make the wife climax first. And they, I certainly found it entertaining, interesting. It certainly is not misogynistic in any way. There are certain parts of the Talmud and Torah that make modern Jews cringe. But in this area, it's not going to upset you. It's not going to make you angry at the rabbis. I'm proud to call myself a feminist, and I was very favorably surprised and impressed at how progressive, considering we're talking 4th century,
right,
in the Middle East, goodness, you would...
Yeah, a little more advanced than they seem to be in Iraq today, and this is written in Iraq, actually in Babylon.
Yes, yes. I mean, actually, there's areas in which I think they're actually a bit more advanced than we are in the United States.
I think you're probably right. I just want to encourage people to pick up 50 Shades of Talmud. Maggie, they can get this on Amazon, and where can they go to find out more about you and your work?
Okay, I certainly have a website, www.maggieanton.com, which has my speaking schedule, which has links to all my books and descriptions of them. It has my bibliographies for people who want to know, where did she get that information? And, you know, who's Rashi? And
I should note, by the way, 50 Shades of Talmud has an excellent index. You know, I didn't really expect it with the 50 citations from Talmud. You can go look up the quotes that are used.
Exactly. And I hope that this will intrigue people, will interest people enough to say, okay, here she's written like a couple of paragraphs about it. I want to see, first of all, did the rabbis really say that? And what else did they have to say? I give you in the back where each section, what the place in the Talmud or the Torah or both, where that comes from. I've been accused in the past of making up Talmud. And so I always like to be very clear that, yes, in my novels I'm making up stuff, but I never make up the Talmud.
The Talmud doesn't need too much making up. By the way, I should note
exactly.
That it's long enough as it is. I should note that, you know, in a way this is sort of foreplay, this 50 Shades of Talmud. And I should also add that in spite of its allusion to the popular novel 50 Shades of whatever, there is... actually, no S&M that I could find anywhere in the Talmud.
No, definitely, there's no S&M in there at all. The rabbis, the closest they get to anything like that is just saying that if the husband and wife want to do whatever it is they want to do, they're married to each other, and they are going to have procreative sex as a result, husband and wife can do whatever
they want to do.
Whatever they want to do, as long as that's what both of them want to do.
And now that we've resolved that, Maggie, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest will be Tammy Rossman Benjamin, director of the Amcha Initiative on Fighting Anti-Semitism on College Campuses. Our playout this morning for the coming Festival of Shavuot, the holiday of Revelation in Torah, that's next Saturday night, Sunday, and for some of you Monday, comes from the humorous group Rebbetzin Tap, Stay Up All Night, for the Tikkun Leil Shavuot next Saturday night. My friends, may you have a Shavuot Tov, a good week, a Chag Sameach for both Yom Yerushalayim today and Shavuot next Saturday night and Sunday, and a week, we pray, of peace.
The 6th of Sivan, it's the day that we receive on.
Anything you want to learn, it's all right.
Put some water in the urn,
stay up all night.
Put on your fedora. Time for Kabbalah.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.